Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of Superhero Speak.
But I think many of the people that love this character and that love superheroes in general have used these stories as inspiration to say, you know what? I'm going to do something good in the world. I'm going to make a difference like my hero when I was a kid.
That is my fondest memory of it, because when you're doing comic books, you want them to affect people.
Right.
You want people to care. You want to strike emotions. And I knew that Clone Saga was striking a lot of emotions.
Can you imagine Pulp Fiction starring Goofy and Mickey Mouse?
I can totally imagine that.
I'm sure somebody's written that one too.
Pounder with cheese and France, Mickey. Boy, ale with cheese, Mickey. Yeah. I can totally
see.
I would watch the hell out of that movie.
Yes, I gladly shall sacrifice up my progeny to you, a mighty Marvel beast.
But Neil Adams is somewhere going, it's my time.
How do you measure success?
Hey, everyone. You are listening to a very special episode of Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dave.
And I'm John, and unprepared. I mean, I'm actually kind of prepared. You got to understand, we are lucky to have houses where we are right now, because we have a tornado watch here until 10 o'clock. And a couple of storms passed through here, and I was wondering if I was going to lose a few lawn chairs. So it's been wacky here, and I mean wacky. There's hail the size of ping pong balls, only about a mile and a half away from me.
No, we didn't have any hail, but you can't lose those lawn chairs because they're hard to replace.
Yeah.
What makes this a special episode, boys and girls,
is we don't have to talk that much.
We've
done our pre-talking.
Is that I went on vacation. We are unprepared for this week. But we have a bank of interviews we need to get out anyway.
Yes, interviews that are rapidly depreciating in value and must be put out.
No, they never depreciate in value. They only increase.
Well, they only get so far. They're not fine wine, Dave.
No, they're more like fine cheese.
That's gonna work. Uh huh.
So
that's great. So we'll make penicillin when they get old enough. Okay.
So yes, we were at the Great Philly Comic Con this year, and we've already released some of the interviews. We have a few we wanted to put together because they're all from the same group of people. It's all related to Source Point Press.
And we do have to a little disclaimer here. We are not a news outlet for Source Point Press. We are not the Fox News of Source Point Press.
No. We're more like the
the interns of Source Point Press.
We're not supposed to say that. No. We're the pitchmen. So yeah,
I mean, honestly, of all of the independent producers that we know, there just seems to be a lot going on at Source Point Press, and I mean a lot. And a lot of the stuff they put out is just good, and so we just naturally gravitate towards if Marvel was around, we would gravitate towards talking to them all the time. But
maybe.
Well, yeah, true.
But this first interview we have, you actually did by yourself when I wasn't there on Friday, and it's Casey Pierce. What can you tell us about Casey?
Well, first, she is truly a lovely human being. She wrote a book called Pieces of Madness, and the way she describes it is seven short tales of the insane, cultist, and paranormal. And I am halfway through it, and I'm telling you right now that if you like losing your mind and Black Mirror isn't good enough, this will do it. Definitely push you off the edge. Do not read this when you're depressed or insane. So wait. Or seen. Or just you know, I would say don't read it, but it's just too good not to. So, I don't know.
How did you read it?
I picked up people, yeah, and well, you know, there's insane, and then there's me. But yeah, no, well, the reason why I picked that up is because while we were at Source Point Press at the Great Philadelphia Comic Con of 2019, we were there talking to Casey about Nora, a trade she has it's a trade made of four issues of her Nora comic. And we went there to talk to her about that. And that's when I glommed onto the fact that she also put out Pieces of Madness. She's pretty damn talented. She's a writer. She wrote everything in Nora Volume 1. And I'm assuming Nora Volume 2 is coming out at some point. There's also a movie announcement, which you can listen to when you listen to the interview. And with that, here you go.
John O'Grady, Superhero Speak, Great Philadelphia Comic Con 2019, our second interview, and it is with Casey.
Yep, Casey Pierce. I'm a writer for Source Point Press. I do science fiction and horror.
Yeah, Source Point Press should sound familiar to anybody that listens to us, because we know a lot of them there, and we read a lot of their stuff. And you have something else called Nora.
Yes. Nora is a four-part comic book series, the science fiction thriller. Nora has the ability to go into your coma, either retrieve you from or help you cross over. But she obtained the ability while working in pathogenic development for the CIA, making bioweapons. So it's very much in the vein of the X-Files, Starship Troopers. I'm a huge Robert Heinlein fan. And it's all hand-painted as well by Sean Seal.
Okay. So you're the author, and you've got John doing the...
Yeah, Sean doing Sean the art, and Jason Westlake is the cover artist. And we just dropped the trade today here at the Great Philadelphia Comic Con. And recently, Bleeding Cool dropped the news that the film is in the works. And let's see, we're shooting for fall 2020 for theaters.
Wow. Okay. And the storyline is basically that she, what? I mean, it's just...
Yeah, she goes into your
she goes into dreams and
to your comas.
And you got this idea from where?
Well, when I was 26, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. So I became obsessed with neurology. And but I've also dabbled in the metaphysical. So I thought to myself, well, what is a coma? Well, to me, it's sort of this desolate house in space between life and death. And the CIA thing came from just way too many NPR broadcasts about, you know, what they do and bioweapons and so forth. And it was during the ice storms that we had in the Midwest. I'm from Michigan. I was barricaded in my apartment, and I just started writing about a woman who was in someone's coma and just kind of combined the two elements.
So that's when you just became a writer. That's just like...
Yeah, I've written before that. I started out as a blogger.
Okay.
And I had a vidcast called Dark Blend. I was a blogger doing interviews with artists and writers, much like you're doing right now. And I sort of dabbled in fiction, but this was me going gung-ho for it.
Nice. And when you came up with the idea, so at some point you got here to Source Point Press. How did you get from writing to publication to joining this group?
At the time, I was published by Rocketing Studios with my book Pieces of Madness, which is a prose book, seven short tales of the insane, cultist, and paranormal. And I was selling out of it at comic conventions with no pictures in it. And it was five short stories at the time.
Oh.
And I was Travis McIntyre and I knew each other from Twitter. And he said, I need you to pitch me a comic. I said, I don't write comics. I don't do comics. It's just not what I do. I mean, I love them. But he said, I need you to pitch me something. And so I went back to this fiction that I was writing, and I'm like, well, I've never even seen a comic script. And fortunately, I knew I was close with Gary Reed, mm-hmm. who wrote Dead World, of Caliber Comics, the late, great Gary Reed. And I was able to peek at a Dead World script. And I thought, okay, this is kind of like a film. So that's why issue one is much of a slow burn, because it's like the first 10 minutes of a movie. And if somebody wants to sample Nora, I always try to sell them one and two.
Mm-hmm.
And then I pitched him the 22-page script, and he signed me to four issues. And we're here years later. The rest is history.
Was it hard going from normally writing, you know, straight prose to a kind of movie or, well,
a script format.
Yeah, script.
Yeah, it was at first. And then once you're in comic script mode, you're like, wow, this is like playing the piano. It becomes a language. And then you go back from that back to prose and you're like, what are words? It becomes very awkward. So bouncing back and forth does get a bit awkward, but you know, as soon as you get moving, you're like, okay, I remember this.
Do you have a preference, or is it based on the storyline?
It's based on the storyline, because the great thing about comics is that you're also telling the story with somebody else. Somebody else is helping you tell the story, like the illustrator. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the prose, you're like, I have to be, you know, grammatically on point. You know, I have to say it a certain way. But do I prefer one more than the other? Not really. It's too hard to pick.
When you're writing the script for the comic book, though, and you get to see like the art for the first time, what's it like? And has there ever been surprises?
Yeah, it's always a surprise because it will always look slightly different than what you saw in your head. But at the same time, it's so surreal. You're like, oh my God, that's something that I wrote that you just illustrated. Like that never ever gets old. It's a very joyous thing. It's something I look forward to more than anything going into a comic book.
Yes. Now, you've written Nora, mm-hmm. and do you have other stuff? You have other stuff, don't you?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The Pieces of Madness, the expanded edition, and mm-hmm. next month, my Viking Witch series will release, and it's more like heavy metal meets Norse mythology meets the craft. It's very sexy, gory, violent. Mm-hmm. It's basically about Viking witches hanging mm-hmm. out on the southern shores of Iceland in the late 400s. And they're all self-contained stories. You'll notice a theme throughout that they're all friends. Mm-hmm. But each one is sort of a gory fable, an action tale, if you will. And I'm super excited about that. Taking you back to a time when like strong women were spray painted on the sides of vans, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then I'm working on another piece, a paranormal piece, graphic novel called The Other People Who Live Here. And I can't talk too much about that right now, but it is in development. Super excited about that as well.
Oh, you can tell us. Nobody listens to us.
Yeah, well, it's semi-autobiographical.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Do you get inspiration from anybody? Like,
oh, yeah.
Do you draw inspiration from any other writers? Or is this all stuff that just happened that one night where you suddenly figured, I really like this writing, and it's all coming from him?
I think that in terms of writers, like you start to emulate a voice of the people that you read, like Robert Heinlein. You know, I'm a big fan of Bradbury. But I think it's a lot of real life experience that I draw from. I even put people I know in real life in my comics because I think that's the ultimate gift. You have now immortalized them. My dad is a very prevalent character in Nora. He's General Brand. You know, the Nora's sister is my cousin Holly. My friend James is James Seeshelm, you know, and I do the very same in Pieces of Madness. Now with that, a lot of that came from my growing up in a Bible-centric home. Mm-hmm. It changes what you're afraid of. You're not afraid of the boogeyman. You're afraid of, you know, spiritual vulnerability and being possessed by Satan. You know, things like that.
As one is wont to be afraid of.
Yeah. Right, like you do. So yeah, I think more than what I read, I do feel like it's real life experience. Although even film, like Nora became my Ellen Ripley. That was the first fictional character I ever looked up to as a child. Hmm. Right, well, age.
When it becomes a movie that's going to kind of blow the characters are only fictional and only relate to real people and, you know,
yeah.
that whole spiel. All right. So you've been... Well, this only just came out now, right?
The whole
volume one.
Yeah, the trade just dropped today, and Nora is newly distributed through Diamond Inn and comic book stores. And I wrote this some years ago, okay. But now it's available in comic shops. And you know, I've been with SourcePoint for almost 5 years now.
Oh wow! Okay.
So I'm Grandma SourcePoint. So I've seen this company go from the little company that could to the company that did. And I couldn't be prouder.
Wow. Have you been involved in any of their projects or helping with that or just...
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I'm writing, let's see, the foreword for David Hayes' Rot Trade.
Okay.
You know,
yeah, David Hayes of Rotten Tail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I've become a general sales rep for the company. So I do about 24 shows a year with SourcePoint Press. And I push the entire brand, the entire catalog. And then I help out with social media marketing. I do setup. I do teardown.
I've been there.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The nitty-gritty stuff. I'm there, too, man. You know, and I have a panel, actually, tomorrow that I do throughout the United States called Good Luck With That. And it's about how to sell indie comics in a, you know, a landscape of stuff enthusiasts and Funko fanatics. And I learned all that I know from SourcePoint Press. So I'll be pushing the brand yet again tomorrow here at Philly Comic Con at 1 o'clock Saturday.
Are you planning on doing more Nora?
Yes. Volume 2 is currently being illustrated by Kelly O'Hara. So it'll be a little different. Cool. She does the painterly style, but her roots are in manga. So I've seen the sneak previews. It's very Blade Runner, very noir.
Excellent. All right. So let's see. Where can people find your stuff online? I mean, sourcepointpress.com.
Right, right.
Obviously. Any other place you want them to look?
Your local comic shop should have maybe some single issues of Nora. I know that the single issues have been listed on collector's sites. So if you find them, snatch them up.
Collector sites, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're worth something?
Yeah. Well, these are the last of them. So a set of Nora, the last time I looked on eBay, goes for $100. Signed.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. People are ridiculous. You can find me on social media at facebook.com/cosmiccasey, both with K's. And Twitter, the same thing. And Instagram, KCD Writes, not as in women's lib, but as in physical writing.
Okay. Excellent. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And,
likewise.
Good luck with the movie and all
Thank you.
That'd be awesome to see.
Thank you.
Because Ron Taylor got picked up, too.
Yeah, it did. So it's Corey Nemec from Parker Lewis Can't Lose and Stargate. I'm so happy for David. David Hayes is amazing.
I know. I mean, what Social Support and Press is really kicking ass now, apparently.
Hell
now
yeah.
You got movies in the line.
You're taking over.
Excellent. All right. So good luck, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
Thank you so much.
You are right, John. She does sound like a lovely human being.
Yeah. She really is. It's kind of it's a real contrast between talking to her and, you know, just having a nice chat with her and then reading her stuff and realizing that somewhere under that wonderful exterior, there's a really disturbed person. Talented, very talented, but disturbed.
Your kind of woman.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, usually they're that disturbed, they're not into me. So, but, all right, so, yeah, Casey's one of the people we talked to there. We also shock of all shocks, we talked to Ben Goldsmith.
Yes, I mean, our good friend and podcast interrupter.
Yeah, it's kind of hard not to talk to him when he rummages through your bag and grabs your microphones.
Well, this is true. We now, tried to stop him, but he's like, no, interview me, please.
Yeah, and if you know Ben Goldsmith, and we kind of know him by now, he is a marketing force of nature, to the point where, you know, other people we know are like, between him and Dirk Manning, I think, they are like two of the best promoters I know in these circles. So Ben Goldsmith is, yeah, I'm not sure if Casey gave him pointers or he gave her pointers or they exchanged notes and just became super presenters. I don't know. But, we talked to Ben about Beyond the Demon, the Sea. And Dave, did you see it?
Yes. Yes. It's an interesting book because it's something different. All the art is actually done by a tattoo artist, in the book. And they stick to the primary colors that you would see in tattoos. All the background is kind of not necessarily flesh tone, but it has that feel to it. And it was interesting.
Yeah, I keep don't know, every time I've talked to him about this, I keep alluding to it being kind of like a fable. It is. It yes. plays like a grim fable, and it ends like a grim fable, a real one, not a Disney, not a Disney-fied one. So, again, with the insanity, I don't know what it is about Social Point Press. We might want to look into a Hellmouth where their central office is. but yeah, again, really well written, and as Dave said, the art is very different. I also compare it to that scene in How to Train Your Dragon when they're looking through the Book of Dragons, and it's I don't know, it's kind of wonderful. But Ben Goldsmith, of course, can explain it to you best, and here he is.
Nobody. Hey, this is Ben here with Superhero Speak. I'm interviewing a couple fellas here. Wait, hold on, I forgot how this works.
No. See, so anyone who remembers our New York Comic Con episode, our good friend Ben Goldsmith felt like he had to keep interrupting interviews.
I had a lot of things to say, you know, and I just kept forgetting until I saw that other people were diligently talking about things that mattered.
So now we're going to talk about something new that you have out that matters.
And there was no one around, so I feel like I only deserve to be jumped into, but there's no one here who's going to do it.
So, Beyond the Demon of the Sea.
Yep, so the Beyond the Demon of the Sea, what this is we are doing a series of four different comics, each one based on a classic American style, or not American, I apologize, classic style of tattoo art. So this one is the Americana Sailor Jerry flash art style from front to back. It only uses the colors that you'd use, red, blue, yellow, occasionally green, and we coffee washed the pages too, so that they look, they look good and old and wrinkled. And it's a one-shot story about madness and murder on the high seas. And one of my favorite parts about it is that Ben Templesmith did the cover, who is one of my favorite artists of all time. And we actually got him to agree to do it.
So, did you have pictures of him to compromise him, compromising pictures to blackmail him with?
I don't think Ben gets embarrassed about anything. I think. Besides, if there is a picture of Ben out there that's not in a three-piece suit and looking like just as awesome as possible, I haven't seen it.
So, I mean, I guess he liked the project and that's why he did the cover. I mean,
I can't speak for him, but I do know that I know at first he was maybe cautious about doing something that was specific style, like that tattoo thing.
Right.
But then one day he just showed me a cover and he was like, yeah, I did it. And it was
cool.
And it looks incredible. I'm thrilled. It stands out.
You can't beat sharks and skulls.
You can't. And he knows that. And we know that. And the people know that. And that's why I'm running for mayor of everything in 2020.
So when did this collaboration came about?
It was interesting because the artist, Davey Broyles, who did the interiors, all the tattoo stuff, he came up to us at Motor City Comic Con, asked us if he could work on anything for us. And Travis McIntyre, the editor-in-chief of Social Press, turned to me and asked if I would do something. And I was like, okay, so you want me to do a comic book with a kid who doesn't draw comics and is a tattoo artist? And okay. But then the more I talked to Davey, the more that I realized that he was really, really game for anything, that he was an exceptionally hard worker, that he was the type of person who will learn, and he learns, and he's fast, and he's hungry, and he's just one of those kids. And I think knowing Travis, that's what he saw in him, because that's how Travis works. So I sort of talked to him, I said, what do you want, you know, and the thing was, is like, I had a guy who was a tattoo artist, so let's do a tattoo comic, you know? I've never seen it before. I never thought to do it before, and those are two reasons why you should do it. You know, it's exciting. It's new. It's something different. I mean, so far, this is the first convention we've had it at, and every time I open it up and show people, they are immediately awestruck by what's going on.
And just to go, like, what we were talking about yesterday.
Yeah, while you're talking about this, I'm going to hold the microphone to the page so people can hear the art.
Excellent. So, hear that? Isn't that pleasing? I got it. So it's not your traditional artwork for a comic book. It's more like a stylized fable, like what you would think a fable would look like. So
I love it. Yeah, I no qualms about that
and
at all.
It's just, it's really beautiful, you know? So,
I love the sparing use of the color.
Right.
And it was very important. I don't have a lot of like necessarily vision per se about what the end result's going to look like artistically because okay. I trust the artists. I want them to do it. But the one thing I was very adamant about from the start is I said, I want this to have the red, yellow, and the blue that all those, when you walk into a tattoo parlor and all the tattoos that are on the side of the wall, the prefab tattoos, mm-hmm. they all have like that red blossom behind them or like a little right. blue coming out. And I was like, it needs to look like, the entire comic needs to look like the side of a tattoo shop, old tattoo shop with like the faded pages. So, yeah, those colors were very important to me, and Davey nailed it. Davey did everything. Davey inked it, drew it, colored it. Like, he did everything.
So, the story idea, was that something you had floating around in your head, and you took this as an opportunity to use the story, or was it born out of his art style?
The second. So, it was more like the play, like the sandbox. Like, you show up to the park, and you get to the sandbox, and there's already toys in it, and so I decided to come up with a game based on what was there. I have other projects that I work on that were me bringing the sandcastle and the shovel and all right. that and convincing my friends to play with the toys I brought. We have one coming out with this artist, Ed Smith and Jay Fosgate, and it's a tattoo. It's bodybuilding aliens, but it's done completely mockumentary style. So like The Office with the confessionals and the fourth right. wall breaking and the camera crews and that was something one of my favorite things. I love that thing. And that was me going like, I want to do this versus this, which was a happy accident. It kind of fell in my right. lap. And so coming up with something that suited both Davey, both the needs of Source Point Press, what I think seems to do well at these conventions and creating something that I thought would be just, as fun as possible, given the parameters.
Cool. So how's the, real quick, how's the convention going for you?
It's a little slow starting. But it's good. I'm catching up with a lot of people that I haven't been able to see in a while, like you guys, which is great. You know, Bob Camp is over there, and we were talking about, I haven't seen him in a bit. So a lot of the artists here are just really incredible people, and it's probably a blessing that I got to hang out with everyone for a little bit first before right. we actually – because once we get in the zone, like even right now as I'm talking to you guys, I'm still looking at people being like, that guy will probably buy this. You know what I mean?
You can't turn it off. I mean,
yeah. Is it possible? they will whip me if I do. You know that, right?
No.
Yeah, and they prefer to whip me.
Yeah,
they would prefer to do that than if I made them money.
Travis told me that before.
He'll tell everyone. I think that's his Twitter profile. It just says Travis McIntyre, editor in chief of Source and Press. I would rather be whipping Ben Goldsmith. So those are the big ones coming up. We have another issue of Silence Room that'll be out in a month. We have a new artist on that, Dustin Irvin, and he's very similar to what Kayla was. They're almost exact similar art styles, and it right now it's at the letterer, so it's done. I mean, all we got to do is print it now.
Cool. So all the books they can get from sourcepointpress.com?
That's right, or you can go to my Instagram, Mr. Ben AU, MRBNAU. Last name's Goldsmith. Oh, something just broke down there. Uh-oh. Did you hear that? Someone just bought something. My last name's Goldsmith, so the AU I thought would be very clever. It's not. It's just a pain in the ass to talk about all the time. And you can always find links there as well.
Is there anything else coming out? Because I know we've talked to Casey Pierce.
Yep.
And the Rejected 2 came out. Anything else to look forward to?
From Source Point Press?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, of course. The new Twisted book came out, and we got a whole bunch of variants of that with like Newbury Comics in Massachusetts, which is for me as a Boston local, that was huge. I'd say Hope by Dirk Manning and Kaylin Smith would probably be the biggest thing.
Yeah. I supported
you saw the Kickstarter on that one.
Yeah,
Kickstarter
I'm on
huge.
The Kickstarter. Yeah. Yeah.
That was huge. Yeah. I don't think that's been the most successful Kickstarter we've ever done.
It's because John wanted to shut up about it on the podcast.
Is that it?
That
Aww,
is why
thanks, man.
So big.
I appreciate it.
Oh, come on. I read the first Hope here last year.
That's where I got mine. Was here last year.
Yep.
And I still have that one. Hopefully, it'll be worth some money now.
Well, yeah, because it's the new number one, which is going to come out for a free comic book day,
is different.
Is different.
Yeah. It's been edited. Some of the panels have been taken out, switched out with something else. So yeah, that that'll be unique to it. And then,
that's how true collectibles are born.
yeah. by accident. We didn't even mean yes. to do it, you know? I mean, anything we I can tell you for a fact from top down, we don't have any intention of actually making things collectible. We just want to make comics. And then, because I know Ogre got picked up by the Key Comic Collector app. The first rejected was, I mean, that thing was, you know, I don't even know how to describe how that was. That people are buying third and fourth printings of the yes. first because it was so crazy. And it's like I said, it's not something anyone's trying to do. It just happens. And yeah. if it does, it's great. It raises brand awareness. But we're just trying to make things. That's what it comes down to.
And movies now, too.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Rotten Tail premiered in Los Angeles last night, actually.
Do you know how it went?
They looked happy. I mean, I don't know. Oh, the LA Times gave it a pretty good review, actually.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, it was for a schlocky B-horror movie that we intended to be that way. The LA Times was pretty nice, actually. They oh, seem wow. to like it. Yeah.
That's excellent.
So, but anyway, I got to get back to doing my thing. I'm going to let you boys wander around and go break some stuff over there.
Yep. No worries.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, man.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you again.
All right, Ben, there you go. We've aired the interview. We'll be expecting payment shortly. And
our payment is basking in his glow when we get to see him at the cons.
Is that glow? I thought it was flop sweat, but okay, maybe it's a glow.
I thought it was aftershave or you know, or Axe body spray. I'm not sure. Okay.
So, yes, definitely check out his new book. It's really cool. I think it's worth a read. And now we have something completely different. Something we have never had on this show before. We talked to L. Whitcomb, who is the sales director for Deepwater Games. And the interesting thing is, so Deepwater Games is owned by the same company, parent company that owns SourcePoint, so they share the booth.
So not completely different.
Right, so not completely different.
Relatedly different.
but what's interesting is I'm, as a creative person, is always interested, well, how do you, what are the processes of, you know, if you make a game, how do you get it out there to the people? And there's actually kind of a renaissance on board games going on right now.
And there are a lot of gaming conventions. I used to go to one about 10 years ago in Connecticut, and at those conventions, instead of people hawking their writing and their comic books and dragging you in to hand you a book, they're handing you a deck of cards. So actually not that much different, but the gaming conventions are really interesting, and as Dave said, I was also really interested to see that side of, I guess, this whole convention thing now, or this whole genre that we see on the side, because they sell Pokemon trading cards and trading cards for other games, and actually some of the authors also come up with games too. I don't know. You know, I come from some, I'm a person who collected Magic the Gathering, but mm-hmm. I was one of those people that was lucky enough to collect cards in Texas when they were beta testing it. So I actually have some Magic the Gathering beta cards, and I never got into Pokemon, but all of my nephews are, and you know, it's just some of the games they come up with. I remember playing a game that had it. You were playing, I guess, Demon Cars. It was like, oh, what was that game on the PlayStation that with all the Demon Cars and
Twisted Metal.
Twisted Metal. It was a board game version of Twisted Metal. And I remember me and my friend at the time, we were there. We ended the game by crashing into each other in glorious combat and just destroying each other. Now, that's a game that, you know, will work. I mean, it was fun. Everybody had fun. Even when they lost, it was good. But here we have – what was her name again? Because I don't have a card out. Of course, I'm not prepared.
L. Whitcomb.
Yeah, L. Whitcomb. So go ahead. What – do you have anything else you want to say before we came?
I'm just going to say, if you have ever decided to try to create a game, or you're in the middle of creating one and you're not sure what to do, this is the interview for you. So without any further ado, take it away, L.
And we're live.
And we're live? Okay, so in our quest to bring you guys something different, we're here with L. Whitcomb, who is the director of sales for Deepwater Games. And something I've always been curious about, and of course, comic book fans a lot of times are avid gamers. So,
absolutely.
So the question I asked you earlier, and I was going to, you know, we're going to ask you to repeat your answer again, is if somebody had an idea for a game, how would they go about getting that made and getting it out to people?
So the road to board game creation is an uphill struggle. There's no way to mince that.
Right.
So the thing to keep in mind when you're developing a board game is, for example, over 5,000 board games made it onto shelves in 2018 alone.
Right.
And when you think about the 5,000 that made it, you have to think about the other 100 or 200,000 that didn't.
Right.
So it is a competitive market, but that doesn't mean it isn't a rewarding one. It does mean you have to bring a lot to the table up front. Typically speaking, what publishers are looking for when they shop around for games is they want to see a prototype that they can play so that they know in entirety what they're signing up for.
Okay.
Now, it doesn't have to be perfectly balanced. You don't need pretty pieces or finished artwork necessarily, but you do need to have a prototype of the game that someone can sit down and play and see if they enjoy the experience itself.
Right.
And now, most publishers can help you with the actual balancing of the game. They'll have developers inside of their staff that can help work out mechanics, pin down precise numbers, bounce ideas off with you. And some publishers, including Deepwater Games, can even help find the right artist for the project for you as well. But the big question mark is, how do you get it into a publisher's hands in the first place?
Right.
And there are a few different ways you can go about that. For starters, many publishers that go to larger tabletop conventions, for example, Origins, Gen Con, PAX Unplugged, they do set aside time to take meetings with designers and try out prototypes. For example, at Gen Con, I will usually do about 8 or 10 hours at the booth during the day, and then I'll spend another 4 hours in the evening trying out different prototypes with designers that have set up meetings with us.
Wow.
So that's one way. There are also conventions that are entirely dedicated to this process. For example, Unpub took place in the Midwest 3 weeks ago, and that was specifically for unpublished game designs to display their prototypes and have developers try them out and see if there's anything they want to bring to the marketplace themselves. And then another method, which we didn't discuss earlier, but I actually spoke with someone else about and kind of remembered, is if you have a game that's basically just cards.
Okay.
You can also create basically a print and play, just a collection of files that you could email to someone and they can print it out and play themselves and give it a go. So that is, if you are unable to travel and you have a game that doesn't have physical pieces or anything, print and plays are an excellent way to connect with developers and publishers and allow them the ability to try out your title without you necessarily being there or having to take time off of work and travel and everything. Because let's be honest, most board game designers, even the successful ones, have day jobs. It is hard to take part in any part of the industry without a little bit of a backup plan, at least until you get mega big.
Right. So you use the term when you're working with a publisher, they help you balance the game.
Mm-hmm.
So you mean like making sure that like one card isn't more powerful than all the other, you can just win the game if you get that. Is that what you mean by balance?
Yeah. So balancing a game is going to look different from each game, of course.
Okay.
So for example, sometimes it is just tweaking minor numbers on cards.
Okay.
For example, Wizards of the Coast with Magic the Gathering has a whole entire development team dedicated to playing and designing those cards and testing them again and again and again
and actually
tweaking the tiniest numbers to make sure the whole entire set is balanced.
Right.
That exists in a smaller scale with board games too.
And actually, I was in Houston, Texas in 1994 when they were playtesting Magic the Gathering by putting out beta sets.
Yeah.
Which is why I actually have some beta cards.
Ooh.
And
those could be worth a pretty penny.
Do they still do that where they would take a game and maybe play it by actually playtest it in the field by selling it at certain games?
So not necessarily selling it. That isn't necessarily what the industry's culture is like
right
now.
That was 94, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But playtesting is an incredibly important part of game design. And I don't just mean like playtesting with the same four people hundreds of times to try and balance your game. Right. I mean playtesting with designers, developers, taking it to game shops, and having total strangers try your title out. You need as many voices as possible. So that's one of the things that a publisher can help you out with, too.
Right.
For example, we met up with a gentleman late last year, really, really enjoyed his prototype in the last 6 months, have been us and our development team helping to balance the game. But also our staff members exist all across the U.S. So
right.
We've individually been taking the game to our local game shops and putting it in front of dozens of sets of eyes. Because the more voices and the more feedback you can get, the greater chance you're going to have a success.
Well, what's the market on this now? I mean, this is an age of video games, mobile games, all that. And, you know, back in 94, of course, you know, the market was wide open, which is probably why Wizards of the Coast and Magic the Gathering, like, basically took control at that point, along with the Pokemon trading cards.
Yes.
Right? So these days, though, what kind of market are you looking at?
The market for tabletop gaming, every facet of it, is the biggest it's ever been, honestly.
Oh.
That being said, it comes with its own challenges. Because, like I said earlier, like, 5,000 different games entered the marketplace in 2018 alone. And when you go to your local game shop, you do not see 5,000 board games on the wall.
No.
Which means your shop owner had to look and like climb through a giant mountain of stuff before they picked like which 50 games they're going to put on the shelf. Mm. So it's not necessarily that money doesn't exist in the marketplace. Financially speaking, the tabletop industry is flourishing. But the amount of product and the amount of ideas coming in is definitely intimidating.
Right. So it kind of brings a thought to mind. Like when you go to a big chain retail store and you go into their game section and they've got 5 to 10 versions of Monopoly on the wall. But yet, that's then not giving you room to bring in new games. Is that... I mean, and I understand big chain stores are actually starting to die out.
They're, well, big chain stores are actually starting to work with the board game community a bit more. So, for example, Barnes & Noble and Target would be two of the biggest ones.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Deepwater Games has only existed for about 13 or 14 months now. So,
oh, okay.
So we are pretty much babies in the grand scheme of things. But Barnes & Noble is actually bringing some of our games to their shelves.
Cool.
So Barnes & Noble specifically is willing to put time and effort into finding stuff from indie companies and bring it to the marketplace,
really good
too. So, and I've actually spoken with and demoed titles to Target buyers and everything,
right.
too. So Target actually has a staff of buyers they're sending out to events to scope out games of this size and caliber. Barnes & Noble does the same. Amazon does the same. So we are starting to see a lot of bigger box stores recognize that this isn't a fluke. Tabletop is here to stay.
Cool. So, and then another unrelated question. If you're not a creative person, you're not someone who's out to create a game, but you still would want to work in the gaming industry. Like, what's, you're a salesperson,
yes.
obviously.
There are so many different opportunities inside the tabletop industry.
So what would you tell a young person who wanted to get in the industry? Like, what kind of job should they look at? Where should they go to look?
So tabletop has a lot of the same like job holes that you're going to find in any other industry.
Right.
So you need sales staff, you need management staff, you need warehouse and packaging directors. Like I live out in Michigan, and MSU has one of the best known like packaging and warehouse programs out there.
Oh.
And like we actually need to find someone from that specialty because our warehouse is growing as we're starting to blow up as a company ourselves. So like there are jobs that you might not think of at first glance for right. the industry that are actually incredibly vital for its success. Advertising, marketing, PR, HR, like as you start dealing with bigger companies,
right.
You're going to see them having to have positions like this. Okay. So you don't just have to explore the creative or the design side
right.
in order to find a home in the tabletop industry.
Cool. If somebody had an idea for a game, what would be like the top three things that you tell them to watch out for or to have ready if they were trying to develop?
Like, there are the basics. Like, always make sure that whatever name you have in mind doesn't already exist as a board game.
Okay.
Consider merchandising. Like, can I actually box this game up and put it on a store shelf?
Right.
Because there are games that can work on a table and cannot sell inside of a store by any means. Just like there might not be a way to box it up or anything like that. There right. might not be a way to display it. So you have to keep in mind that you're not just creating a passion project for yourself. Ideally, right. you're creating a product. So you do need to keep product-like things in mind. So packaging, merchandising, crowd appeal, figure out your target demographic. If you're trying to build a game for families and kids, right. don't put content in the game that's not appropriate to it, or mechanics that are too difficult.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of people like come to me with games where like the game itself and its target demographic or its theme just like didn't match up. The whole entire product does need to be cohesive.
Cards Against Humanity is one of the...
No, I mean, like, Cards Against Humanity has a mission, and it targets and advertises and plays for that mission. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really have any examples on shelves to necessarily give you, because they don't make it to okay. shelves. Those are more so games that I'm going to see in, like, the prototype stage,
yeah.
and I'm not going to sign. Because you need to recognize all of those marketing and merchandising and selling aspects, too.
Right. All right, so Deepwater, obviously deepwater.com, what are some of the games that people could find there?
So some of our biggest titles would include Hanami Koji. It is one of the most highly hailed two-player titles out there.
Okay.
It only takes about 5 minutes to learn and 15 to 20 minutes to play, which is great for a two-player experience. It's in the top 250 titles of all time on Board Game Geek.
Oh, wow.
We actually have two titles in the top 250 on Board Game Geek. Our other one is Welcome To. Okay. So that is a Roll and Write title that came out last year, and it made Geek and Sundry's top 2018 games for year. Polygon actually included it in one of their articles a few weeks ago.
Okay.
We're already getting ready for a fourth print run in like 7 months.
Wow.
So that game has kind of been our bread and butter.
Cool.
Not going to lie. But we've got stuff for, honestly, every size play group. Welcome To plays 1 to infinity players, and I'm not joking about that player cap.
Oh, wow.
We've got two-player titles, some of them casual, some of them very in-depth and intricate. We've got heavy Euro-style worker placement titles, all the way down to, like, matching and memory games that you can play in preschools and elementary schools. We're very big believers that there's a board game out there for everybody. And we want to help them find it.
Cool.
All right. So, so again, deepwater.com, that's where people can
find it. It's actually deepwatergaming.com is our website. And then Deepwater Games will get you to our Facebook, our Twitter, our Instagram. We're pretty much all over the place.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
It was my pleasure.
All right. So there we go. Superhero Speak, once again, pursuing creative interests and giving information to you, the listener.
Yep, pursuing it wherever we find them.
Yes. So, cool. I think this was this is a good informative episode for people out there.
Yep. And, those of you that's still listening, go out and pick up, Beyond the Demon, the Sea from Source Point Press. Or Pieces of Madness by Casey Pierce. That's not a comic book. That's an actual set of small short stories. And then Nora, Volume 1.
And also check out deepwatergaming.com for all the cool games that they currently are publishing. And Also, if you maybe they could publish your game. So.
Yeah, or they at least talk to you about it. They do talk to people, I guess, about making games better. Because that benefits you both, right? Also, one last thing, just make sure that you have your psychologist on standby when you finish reading these books.
On a final note, we did get our approval for Wizard World Philadelphia this year. That is in 2 weeks, so we will be there with bells on. Literally, I'm sewing bells to my pants as we speak.
This is why I will go on my own and get my own interviews at the we've got a hotel room for that. We also have our press passes for New York City and our hotel room, so we're set for the year.
Well, we've got others in the works too.
Do we? you know, there's only so much time I can take from work and my own stuff. I mean, geez.
Oh, I told you have to quit your day job.
Yeah, I don't think my job's going to let me do that. Besides, you don't pay me anything. I need to eat.
Wait, what? You eat? No.
We're developers. We live. What is it? We're like mushrooms. We live in the dark and eat bullshit.
All right. We're off the rails here. So,
well, it had to happen at least once.
Don't forget to check us. Look for us at those cons and send a letter to us. And until then, as always, thanks for listening, and don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.